Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words,
remember when we were living in the 90s and we actually had to sit there through commercials?
You miss the movie and you have to like wait for like ever to see it again.
Oh, you had to go to the bathroom and you couldn't rewind it? And then you're yelling from the bathroom, "What's happening? What happened?" Oh, man, I've been there.
I still do that.
It's like, you can pause it now. Before Sean goes, I realize that we're doing this movie about a bunch of old people, and right now we sound like a bunch of old people of Remember When.
Yep.
So I feel like we are officially them.
It's all right. We are old.
We are officially them.
We're old. Feels good. We're old, brother.
Not really, though.
Welcome to another episode of season 5 of Three and a Half Gentlemen, the podcast, where three of the four hosts provide a refined and intellectual analysis of movies from our private collections, and one of us tries desperately to keep up. We'll let you decide which host is which, but for now, my name is Sean, and with me, as always, are my co-pilots, Jeremiah.
What up, yo? I'm going to go into my room and cry now.
Eddie?
Yeah, well, I've got Medicare.
And Brandon.
Get out.
Which is the most Clint Eastwood thing that you can possibly say. Like, he's got such a growl. He's got such a rasp. I wish I had it. I should start smoking.
With that little crooked, that little crooked.
He's like a cute little dog at times, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he's cute. I think he's just scary.
He's a fucking bulldog. No, but with a little mouth thing.
He's that
right.
Dog he's that's always... Always like he just nips at you the whole time, and you don't ever want to touch him when he comes over. You go to the house to your grandparents' house.
I feel like that's a personal story right there.
Nope. We had good thoughts. All right. With season 5, we've been changing things up a bit. We'll still be picking movies that we think will be fun to talk about. But for this season, we're playing a loose version of 6 Degrees, where each host chooses their film based off the previous one, as long as the movie shares an actor, actress, composer, director, or writer.
As with every review we give, our goal is to answer one simple question. How many drinks does it take to get through the film that we just watched? Now, at the end of the podcast, we'll rate the movie based on a scale of 0 to 5, 0 being a perfect film that you could watch stone cold sober, and 5 being sort of the film that makes you feel like you're 65 years old and forced to run a 10-mile gauntlet. Yeah, which you could be in your 30s, it still fucking sucks. Oh, yeah.
But you know what? They powered through that shit. I hats off to them.
They powered through
their walk run. I love that. Last week, Jeremiah chose No Country for Old Men. And with this week, Sean, the host, has the pick. So, Sean, tell us what movie we have spacewalking toward us tonight.
So tonight we've got 2000s Space Cowboys. Tommy Lee Jones, as we know, had a miraculous performance in No Country for Old Men. And I think that of all the pantheon of his other performances, this one kind of was fun and energetic and really it made fun of their age quite a bit, which is, I find funny. So I chose this Clint Eastwood directed film, Space Cowboys. Brandon, nice. take us through it.
Yeah, so Space Cowboys follows 4 retired pilots who are tasked with being sent to space to reprogram a malfunctioning Russian satellite, which may not be as innocent a satellite as initially thought. Directed and starring Clint Eastwood, Space Cowboys also stars the incomparable Tommy Lee Jones, as Sean just mentioned, as well as Donald Sutherland, James Garner, Marcia Gay Harden, and James Cromwell. Space Cowboys has earned an IMDb rating of 6.5 out of 10, and has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 78% with the critics and the audience score of 53%.
Wow, are people fucking like ruthless these days?
I feel like they're maybe misinterpreting what the movie was about. Like, it's a fun shtick on old people in space.
Yeah, I mean, Eddie, I feel like this is a movie that deserves a little bit higher than whatever the hell Young Frankenstein got. That's all I'm saying.
I think we should continue. And I'll tell you more how I feel and if you subscribe, and I'll tell you later.
As with every movie that we review, we try to pair our selection with a drink that we feel will enhance the viewing experience. Ed, take us through the cocktail that we will be enjoying This evening, please.
Are you serious with this cocktail?
Yeah, you know what's funny is when Brandon asked me that question, I was midway of like reading like my like Mets part, and I'm like, dude, why do you have to ask me a question? I'm trying to put my like my bifocals on right now.
There's
to
no read blue this. Curacao though.
Yeah, well, to celebrate our geriatric astronauts. That's a back
geriatric.
To back. Yeah, but back to back with astronauts.
Old.
That's
old.
A, wait, that's a
why
very,
would you have to use that fucking word?
To celebrate
you can use any other words.
Old people astronauts.
No, I know how to say geriatric. It's astronauts with it that just you know. We'll be drinking the Ensure cocktail. To make this drink, take a single serving of Ensure. If you don't know what that is, Ensure, guys, is it's
old
a bottle
person,
that's like it's like protein. Yeah, it's so.
Wait, is that the one that makes you like shit? Is that
no,
the
one?
That's
no,
Activia,
it's
bro.
It's protein.
Yeah, that's Activia. Yeah.
Oh, that's Activia.
Jamie Lee
my bad.
Yeah, take
Jamie
a single
Lee
serving of Ensure. Pick your favorite flavor, chocolate or vanilla, along with a scoop of vanilla ice cream, a shot of creme de la cacao, and a shot of Kahlua. Blend these together. Enjoy your drink while you sit there and enjoy your old age. Did you make this up yourself, Brandon, or did you?
No,
find
no, I
this
found
somewhere?
This. I found this one. I found this on a. I think it was an old person's. I don't want to ostracize anybody. I found it on an old person website.
Yeah.
Like it's, but it sounds amazing. Wow. Like, doesn't it? I mean, it sounds like a good shake.
Yeah.
It sounds like I'm going to have an accident pretty soon. That's what
I wish.
Like.
Yeah. I liked it. It's Ensure because of the whole joke. That was funny.
That is so dirty.
Literally, it could be dirty.
This movie would have been awesome if it would have talked about Ovaltine. Like, make sure you drink your Ovaltine.
That's what Ensure is. Well, basically, that's what Ensure is.
The Clint Eastwood.
It's Ovaltine.
Drink your
Ovaltine for old
bastard.
People. So, obviously, I picked this movie because it fits our dynamic of 6 degrees. But I also want to kind of get into – I mean – I don't know where to start.
Yeah, I don't either.
Let's start with the characters. Let's start with Clint Eastwood. And you got a very young dubbed Clint Eastwood and a dubbed Tommy Lee Jones breaking the sound barrier back in what 1958? I think it's 1958.
Did you recognize one of the actors?
Toby Stevens, I believe, was one of the actors.
No, I think it was a young John Hamm.
John Hamm played one of them, but Toby Stevens played Clint Eastwood.
Listen, before you go, Sean, I gotta voice my first frustration. And no, it's not going to be just littered with frustrations movie. But for fuck's sake, them overdubbing their old man voices for these young little peppy pilots. I was watching it. I looked over at Amanda and I'm like, is this not pissing you off? And she's like, what? What are you talking about? And I said, I can't watch this movie. And she's like, why? And I'm like, old school Tommy Lee Jones and Clint Eastwood. Was, blah, blah, blah. He's just there. And we've got John Hamm, who's in his 20s at this point. Listen, just go with the normal voices and just say they aged into what they aged into. But when you have a voice like Tommy Lee Jones, it's so fucking iconic. You can't throw that on a 22-year-old guy and expect it to work.
I feel so sorry for the actors. You're like, wow, I'm actually seeing these parts. I get this part. And then you watch the premiere, and then you realize that your voice is dubbed the whole fucking time.
I think the worst one had to have been, though, Donald Sutherland, because it just didn't fit. Oh, like, the voice
Cromwell
didn't
fit
at
fit
all.
Either.
The other two, Cromwell didn't fit either. But he's looking at the nudie magazine in the truck, and it's just like, I felt awkward. I felt like I don't know. Just it didn't.
We were
fit
talking
for
about
me.
Benjamin Button, and it felt like Benjamin Button when you got this old guy, and you got this young guy, and they're just
wearing
one
glasses.
And the same.
For a moment, it caught me off surprise. So I was like getting my drink ready and my you know snack. So I was just like looking around, and then it's like black and white. I was like, okay, you know. And then I hear Tommy Lee Jones, and I had to squint at the TV. It's like. Is that wait? Is Tommy Lee in the background? Like, which one? Is that Clint Eastwood and Tommy? Who the fuck's talking? Are they in a different plane? Like, I was so confused at one point. I was like,
that's why as Eddie's making his drink, he's like, I'm gonna pour another one right now because I'm gonna need it.
Yeah. See, what I like about this movie is, I'm just gonna go ahead and start because I think I'm a huge fan of this movie. It has a grounded plot, which is what I like. It's not super crazy. It's about a guidance system made in the. You know, the 50s that made its way under a Russian bird. And then all of a sudden, you know, the only people who can fix the technology are old people. and you, I mean, you send them up to space. That's about as grounded as sending old people to space is possible. And now that we've seen John Glenn in space at 90, and we saw, you know, the other guy, who's the other guy?
Buzz Lightyear.
Buzz Aldrin. Oh, Buzz one. Aldrin went to space at, you know, 90. So, you know, this is possible for geriatrics to go to space.
Jeremiah, I got to ask you, because I know that you were such a huge fan of the initial one. Was this not geriatric Armageddon, though? Like, literally, it gave you the same feels. It's like, oh, this group of people, this select group of people, are the only people who can accomplish this task. So we're going to send them up into space without really the training that they need.
Bro, I mean, this is all I can say about this, man. I feel like between the 90s and the 2000s, any movie that was set in space was just, it was always like, let's get the band back together and we're going to do this one more time, space concept, you know?
Throwing shit at the wall and see what sticks.
The story almost feels Armageddon, but the thing about what's different between this and Armageddon is that you just go with the cast. Yep. That's just pretty much what it is.
I agree.
That's all I can say with that.
And I feel like they make it a little believable. Not that it is. It's way out there. But it's like, but I mean, It's every more joke, everything just kind of fits. Yeah.
It is more, if you think about these are four ETS military astronauts that never got a chance.
Yeah, right.
So it's like, and you know, they know what it takes to go up there. They're not dumb. Like, so it's more believable than Armageddon. And it became a very wholesome movie for me, like, of seeing some of my quality actors in my lifetime, like, and I got to see all four of them on the screen. Like, you have Tommy Lee Jones, Clint Eastwood, Sutherland, and James, right?
James Garner.
I mean, that they're all like very equally. Like, it was cool to see that, and I thought I took it as that. Like, okay, I want to see these. Like, this is a 2000 movie. I think it snuck through that little era of like good movies, and it just became like a very classic, wholesome of, you know what, this is Tommy Lee Jones and Clint Eastwood, and I'm going to pay my respect to them by watching this movie almost, because they did other great movies. This became like a funny astronaut family movie. Like, I almost knew, okay, no one's going to die in this movie. Like, I had that feeling, like, and then, yeah, whoops. No. So I was like, oh shit, somebody does die. but I had that feeling, like, okay, like, everyone's like, this is a PG movie. Yeah. Everyone's going home to see
the shadows in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, right. But I mean, and this goes back to Sean. We talked about this last week. And, you know, Sean mentioned last week that this is a conversation that he and I always have, which is really, what's the purpose of a movie, right? Is the movie supposed to make us, you know, feel deeper and think philosophically, or is it supposed to be just entertaining? One of the things I love about this movie, and no, I'm not saying it's a movie that I absolutely love, but what I really enjoyed about this movie is the fact that you see these four guys, and Ed, you're right, they're four class actors, you know, I mean, the high class actors, but they're just having fun. Like, yeah, you can see it's like palpable that they're just enjoying what they're doing. And I mean, I think one of the ones that we see the most is, and we can definitely talk about Eastwood, and we can definitely talk about Tommy Lee Jones, but I think the one that stands out to me the most is Donald Sutherland, who, for the most part, does really, I mean, especially when he was younger, some overly serious movies. It's nice to see him just kind of, you know, let his ponytail down at the beginning of this movie and just have fun. And there's nothing more exciting. I've said this before on this podcast, but there's nothing more exciting for me than to watch somebody enjoy the thing that they do.
This is a very unusual movie for Clint Eastwood to direct.
Very.
When you think of Clint Eastwood, you don't think going to adventure out of space type of movie. And I believe that I read he was not supposed to direct this movie. He was just supposed to be a leading actor. But from my understanding, that there was so much problems going into the production, he was just like, fuck it, I'll do it, apart, you know? Mm-hmm. But this is an unusual movie for like a directing style. What do you guys think about it?
I feel like these four guys, Clint Eastwood, Tommy Lee Jones, James Garner, and Donald Sutherland, all got on set and said, all right, we're old people. We're going to space. I got the premise. Let's fucking just make the best movie we can within the parameters. And you can tell James Garner, he has one basically role. He says, he stands the whole fucking movie. He stands and he puts the little arm in the hole. That's all he's got to do.
That's his job.
And I swear to God, every time the camera pans past him, he's got a shitty grin on his face. Like, I get to be on set with these great actors and have fun. So to Jeremy's point, I think that with as much turmoil as there was at the beginning of the movie, Clint Eastwood, you know, out of his comfort zone, perhaps, I think that they just kind of all jumped in and said, let's do the best we can with what we got, make as many funny jokes as we can, and let's go.
I bet Clint Eastwood's very funny. Like, I bet he's like sarcastically like funny with like he has this humor it's that crude. Like a lot of people probably don't catch. It. And I was gonna say like, there's not many space movies that are comedies.
Well, there's
filled in there. You have Galaxy Quest and you have Spaceballs, but I'm looking at like all these space movies, and it's all everything's fucking serious. It's very serious. Like life or death and the world's an end. And this is like – it brought in a different aspect of like, hey, let's have some old people go up there and save the world. Like it was a different aspect of it.
It's slapsticky.
Yeah.
This is a very cute Clint Eastwood movie. How can you really say that about Clint Eastwood in any of his other fucking movies?
But it's not because of him.
Right. How many – that's exactly what I was going to get to. How many Clint Eastwood movies have you really seen? Jeremiah, have you seen like a ton of them?
I've seen most of his westerners. I've seen most of his Dirty Harry movies. A lot of his detective works. I mean, it's pretty fucking
Gran Torino.
He did Any Which Way But Loose. He did. I mean, he's done some of these. Like, it's almost like he's bored doing greatness. So he's like, I'm gonna throw in some fun for the kiddies. Like,
sprinkle some of this random shit over here just to because he didn't get a paycheck.
I'm bored of being greatness. Yeah.
He did a wonderful movie called Bloodwork. Mm-hmm. And it was a cop who had a heart transplant. And I can't remember the guy's name because it's just he's in Dumb and Dumber. He's not Jim Carrey, but he's the other guy. Jeff Daniels.
Oh, Jeff Daniels.
And I'm telling you right now, it was one of those movies that you're watching, you're like, the fuck did he direct? Like, why would he direct and star in this movie? And then all of a sudden this movie takes this fucking turn and you're like, oh, there it is. Like he saw something great in it. And I think that he perhaps didn't see something great in this movie, like from a critic standpoint or cinematographically, but I think he saw an opportunity to work with some great people and he went, you know what? Let's go. Let's have fun. And I think that he's done that in his career a couple times mm-hmm. where he sacrificed perhaps the movie for, to work with.
But people. I feel like he's also done this in his career where it's just like, I'm going to do a movie where it shows like, you know, us senior citizens can do this better than the next generation type of thing. And it seems like he does it a lot with some of his movies, but
yeah,
I'm just going to say that this is probably the most bizarre, crazy movie that he's ever directed. I mean, without a doubt, dude.
But there is a really nice, strong element in this movie of it. Don't throw the older generations away just because the, you know, it's new technology.
Yep.
You know, I always go through this, like, yep. with my grandma, but when she was alive, I had to remember that when she was born, not everyone had a car, not a TV or like a cell phone, not even have a car. So when she struggled with the remote control, it was completely a foreign thing to her that she didn't have her whole life. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm watching the new generation. You know, it's funny because I reminded of Back to the Future when Elijah Wood, little young Elijah Wood, says, you have to use your hands to play the game, right? And we're getting to that point where kids don't understand physical media anymore. They don't understand what a Blu-ray is, what a CD is, what a record is, what a, mm-hmm. you know, what we have gone through. And I think that this movie really does encapsulate, at least in part, that transition from, hey, let's not just throw away old people because we think that they're, you know, antiquated.
Yeah,
they don't know what a flip phone or how to even do dial a regular rotary phone. Yeah, like that's hilarious when you see the younger generation try to use one of those. I was like, oh my god, I know how to use this. What does that make me?
Old. It makes us old, Ed. That's right. My niece for Christmas asked for a record player, an LP record player, and I'm like, Riley, do you know what a record is? And she goes, yeah, they sound so much better than, you know, than online. And then I'm like, well, what records do you want? Taylor Swift. I'm like, fuck.
Hey, you can eat it too.
John, to piggyback on that, Hannah's daughter got her first CD player in her CD. And she's like, can you help me do this? I'm like, no problem. You see this?
Help you do this.
This is a CD. You put Label it into up. this. And then, no, this is play. And then you can skip the song. And she's like, oh, my God. And she keeps repeating the same song over again. I'm like, oh my God. Right? Yep.
And she's holding it. And you're like, all right, don't walk around. Don't walk too fast. Don't jostle it at all because it'll skip.
Jeremy, next Christmas, I see a Walkman in her future with a cassette player. And then she has to understand that you got to rewind. You have to rewind the damn thing and wait for it. And then you hit play, and then you're good to go at that point.
You're going to need a CD case for her because overall she's going to be like, well, now I have three. What did I do with them?
I will be able to show the art of actually using your CD binder and how to actually store your CD.
Yeah, so I felt that with this movie. I see the same thing what we were saying.
Yeah. So, okay, so I want to move into a couple things, mainly, and maybe we're jumping way too out of place, but one of my biggest biggest complaints is, to me, the ending felt rushed and it felt too technical. And I don't know if anybody else felt that same thing, but a lot of the things that they were trying to explain that they were going to do, I'm just sitting there going like, okay, I'm just going to go along with the ride because I don't know, I understand a fucking thing that's going on, especially with Tommy Lee Jones the whole nukes.
They did throw some big words at it.
And I'm not allergic to big words by any means, but I am sitting there and Amanda's sitting there and we're like literally going, Amanda looks over at me, she goes, what are they doing? And like, what are they trying to do? And I looked at her and I was like, I have absolutely no clue, but I'm sure they're going to win. Like, and then, you know, then you've got Tommy Lee Jones's body just up there on the moon and he's just there. Like, I gotta be honest, this movie was going good, 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 good. And then it was like, ooh, there's a cliff.
Oh no, no. Okay. So I'm going to
jetpack thing of like, okay, well, like we only have one jetpack, and I was so confused. I was like, did I miss a part? Like, no, I didn't miss any. So
he deleted scenes?
And they looked at me. They were looking into like these other parts, and I was like, okay, somehow they're trying to build something, but it felt like I was lost at a pivotal moment of the movie. I was like, why am I?
The production company said we need to cut off 40 minutes. How do we do it?
Hold on, no.
All of a sudden, they have only one jet now. I'm like, what the hell happened?
I don't agree with you guys. Go, Jeremiah, go ahead.
Son, okay, the thing that really got me surprised in this part here was that I'm like, okay, you're going to actually try to fix the satellite. What? It's a secret nuclear warhead device? What's going on here? And then the thing that I'm trying to like wrap my head around is that you're going to fly Tommy Lee Jones with the nukes into space.
Into the moon? No.
Into the moon?
No.
So, are the nukes in the moon?
Yes.
No. The nukes got him to the moon. Well, see, Sean, this is the problem.
40 times.
This is the problem. Nobody knows but you.
Okay. No. So
where did the nukes go then, Sean?
So they needed,
where did they go?
Stop. They needed thrusters. Okay, so here was the rule. They needed thrusters to get the module at least halfway away from Earth into the moon's atmosphere. And then he was going to use the nuclear missiles to shoot out into space so that they didn't hit the moon.
And this is how Independence Day starts.
Come back, and they talked, and Marcia Gay Harden talked about this, as you only have to get it halfway there. She did it very early in the movie, and the moon's gravitational will take over.
Which is how he's
basically
there.
He had the module with the jetpacks on it, and they had
just riding rockets to the moon.
It reminds me of the end of Doctor Strangelove. Like literally, he's just sitting on the rocket.
He was just sitting there. Though,
yeah, he
right?
was just. Well, I mean, he was just sitting there. Yeah, with little like. Anyway, but if you watch the end of the movie, there's footprints from the module to where he was. So he actually survived the trek and then walked and then sat down and died. But the nuclear missiles went off into outer space to, you know, some alien planet is now
having Sunday tea right now.
All of our planets are in solar systems.
Everybody wants to blame
the other way.
Empire.
They went the other way.
That's how Alderaan went. We're just saying.
The other way.
He shot him into the sun. Like he was shooting him into the sun so they wouldn't, you know, anyway. That's the whole premise.
I appreciate
of that
Sean,
part
but
of the movie.
You got to be honest; it wasn't super.
That creates
clear.
A black hole. I almost want to say that creates a black hole.
And then we have
hole.
Interstellar. Yeah.
Doesn't that happen to Superman Part 4, where he throws a fucking nuclear device into the sun and somehow?
No, it's
gives
Superman
birth?
One. The Superman one, and then he breaks the Phantom Realm.
It's Sunshine too, isn't it?
For that's, Superman too. No, that's Sunshine. Superman one. Yeah. Oh, Sunshine! I've never seen.
Restart
but Superman one.
Good movie for 7-8.
He goes backwards in time. He goes backwards in time, grabs a nuclear missile, throws it at the sun. It explodes in the sun, and then that kills the – it destroys the Phantom Zone. Then Zod comes for number two.
So I'm glad to know that there's no nuclear missiles on the moon. So I'm happy to know that.
No, I mean, there's not.
I missed that part, Sean. I'm not going to lie. Just, at one point in my head, I was thinking, do they know they're shooting missiles at the moon?
So let me just ask you this. Is it so unreasonable?
Every satellite out there has a missile. And that's just, all this movie showed me is that, I guess we can have missiles out there.
I feel like the writers in this movie were just like, we're on a roll here. What about nuclear weapons in the satellite? Yes.
And not one, like five of them. like five of them. Listen. Like we can't just have one.
And but so what happened? Did technically the batteries just went out of the satellite? Well, like, what happened?
What happened is the guidance system failed because it had been up there longer than it was supposed to be.
The batteries died.
It wasn't a power issue, Ed. It was actually a circuit issue. And the judge of bunnies up there. Anyway.
Bro, so you got to understand that this is Sean's movie, right? Yeah. So he saw this movie in the theaters. In the year 2000, there was Gladiator. There was Patriots. There was a Perfect Storm.
Armageddon just happened at 1998.
Sean didn't see those movies, Sean, but he saw Space Cowboys in that theater.
There's little 15
with my grandparents.
Interesting. That is interesting. He's to like, think that, ooh, that you saw this.
I
want to
see a movie that is starring people seven times my age.
Yeah,
that's Sean.
With my grandparents, I remember going to see this movie with my mom, my papa, my grandma. That's we all awesome. Went to see this movie in 2000. That's awesome. Invite
with my grandparents.
That's cool. And then on the way home, Sean's explaining like, what the thrusters are actually doing to his grandparents. I love that.
So I don't agree with you that the movie got technical. I think the movie was actually kind of technical all the way through.
I thought it got so.
And that's one of
It was technical all the way through, but it was confusing as fuck. And I'm saying this in a very critical but like honest way. It got confusing. Like I'm pretty good at following complex plots, but I was like, what are we doing? And it wasn't so much like
foreshadowed.
Yeah, well, they foreshadow with Marcia Gay Harden and saying that, and that makes sense. And like, I got the physics.
They foreshadow the entire movie.
Well, I got the physics of it, and I got
they foreshadow the entire movie.
But my thing is, like, literally, it seemed like they cut out about 20 minutes of exposition that was kind of needed to explain this. And I'm going to say one other thing, and then I'm going to talk about positive things. But I was really upset, and this is probably because it's Clint Eastwood, and Clint Eastwood doesn't really have an emotional bone in his body. I get that. But did you guys feel that we were missing? Yeah, Sean, it's true. We were missing some kind of emotional.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, yeah. We were missing that emotional connection, that emotional goodbye between Tommy Lee Jones' character and everybody else. It was like, I'm going to make this decision. And then we got Marcia Gay Harden. She's crying.
Close the hatch and just move it forward.
We didn't get any of that. And I got to be honest, that left a sour taste in my mouth.
Well, let me just kind of curb that before we go on, because I think that the point of the movie was that this was a chance in one in a lifetime, and they would rather die in space flying in a brick that literally none of them bailed out because they just were like, well, we're old, let's fucking go down with this ship rather than survive one more day.
Ride or die with my boys.
Yeah. And it was almost like when Hawk made that decision. Every single one of them would have made the decision for any other of the crewmate. It wasn't an emotional decision. It was a logical decision. And yes, it was sad to lose Hawk, but he died with his boots on. He died doing something that they would have dreamed of doing because they spent their entire lives at the edge. Pushing the boundary of space and pushing the boundary of speed and pushing the boundary of everything. They could die at any moment during their entire career. And so I don't think that it would be genuine for these characters to show this overt emotion because maybe when they got back, but like, I agree just want with the sentiment. There should have been some at least sort the of Marcia like a Gay Harden or,
character. Yeah. Right? That relationship, it seemed nice.
Was,
I know
he was a wreck.
He cared about his wife still. Like I get that. But at the same time, like he meant something to her, obviously, like clearly he meant something to her. And we didn't get any kind of sentimental.
Well, and you kind of had that, but you kind of had that with the cancer. You kind of had that with he only had 8 months to live. They had that beautiful moment under the plane.
On the bridge or somewhere.
Yeah, it was under the plane that he retired. Like, I think that you got that catharsis. And I think that she knew one way or the other, he wasn't coming back to her. Like, even if he survived the mission, there was no future for them.
Yeah.
Listen, like, this movie has a lot of, like, pros to it, right? You know, when you get over the whole thing about 7-year-olds, astronauts being trained and everything like that, you know, getting, you know, the clearance to pass health check, you know, and somehow NASA's not able to use their kind of computer, not able to figure things out. Like, I totally get it.
I mean, when you put it that way,
a lot about this movie, what I really like about this movie is that there's a redemption arc to the story with friendship and the characters find this purpose in this mission. And you throw all that shit out, you know, and you're just like, you know what? Fuck it. You know, I'm not going to just think about it. I'm really like focusing on these four people here that have this connection, and you're going to go with the ride.
Okay. Rate these three movies that came out in 2000. All right. With what, one, two, and three. Okay. First one, Battlefield Earth. Anyone see that with John Travolta?
Yeah, John Travolta and Barry Pepper.
Okay. Yeah. Battlefield Earth. Two, Space Cowboys, and three, Mission to Mars.
Well, I remember Mission to Mars being actually pretty good, but Tim Robbins is terrible.
Well, he's a wooden plaster sometimes.
I'm gonna go Space Cowboys over Mission to Mars. Yep. Wait, Mission to Mars, was that Val Kilmer or was that Tim Robbins?
That's Tim Robbins.
So Tim Robbins.
Okay,
Red Planet was Val Kilmer.
Yeah. Red Planet was Mel Kilmer. So I would say that Space Cowboys is the best of those three by a long shot. Damn,
I have to agree with Sean.
I say, well, this movie also makes Armageddon look amazing. So
I don't know, man. Is this the year 2000, or am I just like going to wait for TNT to come out with their James Bond marathon and shit like that? Because
hey, don't knock it, James Bond.
No, I'd rather watch that. I'd rather focus like 8 hours of James Bond movies.
But let me just say this, okay? As much as I think there are flaws to this movie, I don't think this movie is a zero or even might be even above average. But my point of it is, I think that it had a good message. It was entertaining to watch. I think the CGI held up fucking tremendously. I don't know if anybody else watched it and went, it was fine. Yo,
even the astronauts who actually saw a premiere of this said that this was like one of the best like space movies they ever seen, actually. So that was pretty cool how they did that.
And I think a lot of it was not CGI. I think a lot of it was miniatures, and they were able to get in close on this. The action was fun. I thought it kept you a little on the edge of your seat. I thought I think the movie did have – it did have a lot of positives, but I do hear your negatives. I really do.
Well, I'm gonna say one of my.
I really get it.
One of my go-to, critical points, or you know, not critical as in like negative critical, but like when I'm analyzing
James Cromwell and how he's like
We need to talk about Cromwell and his accent that comes in,
out of the way of everything,
and his accent that leaves sometimes, and his accent that comes in and then it leaves sometimes. No, but real quick, before
that's the James Cromwell accent.
I love James Cromwell. This was not
this his is not his movie
nominated performance.
This is not Babe. Is all I'm
this
saying.
This is like I'm like you could have put so many other great actors in there. You put James Cromwell to be mean. He's not mean. James Cromwell's not mean.
Oh, shit. No, but let me just
his story. It's like
I was just gonna say this real quick to what Sean was saying just a minute ago, but. You know, for me, there's a definite differentiation between a movie and a film, right? And there always will be. And I think that we need to have that distinction. This is not a good film. It's not a film. And a film is one to me that you're going to study in a film class. It's not cinema. Yeah, I think the film and cinema for me are interchangeable for sure. This is a movie where you go and you know, we would call it a popcorn movie, or one that you just go and maybe this is the difference, Sean, between you and me is, right, you like movies much more than I like movies. I like film. I like cinema. I like things that when I leave the theater or leave the couch, I'm feeling changed. I'm feeling different.
I'll tell you why I believe that this movie is important to the pantheon of film. Because prior to, I would even go so far as to say, whenever Glengarry Glen Ross was, like that generation, so 92, 91, you didn't see old people leading movies. They retired or they became supporting actors, or they, you know, went into this old, you know, funny sidekick or whatever. You didn't see, you know, people over 75, 80 lead in top line of movie.
You know who the youngest one was? Tommy Lee Jones was the youngest. And by the way, has that man always been old? Like, literally, I think he came out of high school.
Oh yeah,
as a geriatric.
So he was in a great movie with Steven Seagal. He was in a great movie with Steven Seagal called Under Siege, and he looks exactly the fucking same as he looks now.
Probably younger than us.
Exactly.
Same with our age. Same with No Country for Old Men. Yeah. Like that whole timeline. I'm like, which one?
And the man looks good in the cowboy hat. He looks good in the cowboy hat. He looks good with glasses.
Wasn't it nice seeing him smile and laugh? Like, I liked his character because it was just enjoyable to watch. And, you know, he always seems to play the straight-laced guy. I even go into, like, Men in Black, which, honestly, Sean, I thought we were going there with you. So this is a great change-up that I didn't see coming. I whiffed bad. But, you know, you got Agent K, right? He's the straight-laced guy who, I mean, he never smiles, never cracks a joke. And I feel like, to me, that's who Tommy Lee Jones is. Like, if I ever were a casting director and I was like, I need a straight-laced character who's a little bit older, boom, Tommy Lee Jones, 100%. And for him to play, in a lot of ways, I would say the second of the comic relief. I think that James Garner, I personally think, was underused in this movie. Tommy Lee Jones, Donald Sutherland, he's the comic relief. But then Tommy Lee Jones, Sutherland's the comic relief. But then Tommy Lee Jones, I think, follows right in his footsteps. And it's nice to see somebody like that changing their stripes just a little bit.
It was unique. I thought he was trying a little bit too hard. And maybe that's because I'm so used to Tommy Lee Jones, the other Tommy Lee Jones. So I wasn't used to it, maybe. So in my head, like, I was thinking, like, okay, he's funny, but like, maybe it's, I'm not used to him being that type of actor. Like, so I see what you're saying. So, but I took it almost as in, like, he was trying too hard. I laughed, but overall, I was like, okay, you know, he's like, he was joking around and just being a jokester his whole afterwards, a little bit too much for me. I don't know. And then I still think, though, it was fun to see.
No, the Tommy Lee Jones I know is the crazy wild Tommy Lee Jones, you know, like the Two-Face, Batman Forever, Two-Face, you know, Under Siege, you know, which he plays a really great villain. You know, if you watch Natural Born Killers, oh, he's off the walls in that movie now.
Yeah.
It's nice to see him actually playing like the heartbeat of the movie, because he is the heartbeat of the movie when you think about that.
For sure.
It's weird to see that.
But I do think the best part of this movie is the subtlety. And it's kind of hard to pick up on a lot of the jokes because Clint Eastwood's a very soft talker. But he has at least 20 one-liners that I think are just precious. You say James Garner's underused. I agree with you. But when he's given his sermon at the beginning of the movie, and then he goes into his story about, you know, his team pushing space and whatever. And then at the end of that, when he comes up to ask him to go, he says, "You'll have material for one or two more sermons."
Yeah. And I think that's the problem, Sean,
it's a subtle line that.
But I loved how they set him up as being like a really funny and not main character, but one we're going to get some more lines from. And then he was like the joystick guy who was able to just maneuver the ship. And I think that was unfortunate.
I agree.
To be honest, I'm not a huge James Garner fan, and just because I haven't seen a lot of stuff, or I can't think of a lot of stuff besides The Notebook, maybe, that I've seen him in. But I really love that intro to him. And I was like, ooh, he's going to be a fun character to see. And then all of a sudden he just kind of like goes to the background, you know, which, I mean, I guess you have to do, because there's a lot of moving parts in this movie.
I think Donald Sutherland came to the forefront. Yeah. I think that was the problem, is Donald Sutherland kind of put in a better performance than perhaps they were expecting. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's got subtle lines too, where they're doing their eye test, and you know, he goes, "FLAPP, I'm just gonna do the bottom two lines, darling." And he's like,
I only need
these glasses for, like, I love older people. I love the bygone era. And I do. So I really enjoyed just the subtlety of it, the funny little quips and the back and the forth. And that's so Clint Eastwood too, is just the subtle one liners and not trying to be overtly funny, just kind of keeping it light.
It's pretty crazy to think of these actors. They underwent the training program to prepare for these roles. Mm-hmm. That's pretty fucking remarkable, man. You know, when you think about that.
I feel like that was a Clint Eastwood requirement.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at Tommy Lee Jones now, and I forgot how many Dre movies that he was in. From like 91 to like 2012, I've watched all these fucking movies.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and then like I'm all the way down to Small Soldiers with the cartoon movie.
I was hoping, Sean, that you'd go Small Soldiers.
Volcano and Blown Away and Double Jeopardy. Double Jeopardy.
The Client.
Yeah, jeez. Double Jeopardy was good.
Yeah, remember when Sean was complaining? I went, he was like, No Country for Old Men left me with nobody.
No.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
He's full of shit.
Hurt my feelings.
Yep. Well, no, I was trying to find a movie that fit Brandon. He wasn't in Brave.
No. What's her name? It's Kelly McDonald.
Yeah. So as we kind of get to the end of the podcast, one of the things that I did think was interesting about the dynamic at NASA was how unprepared they are for any type of mission that is not scheduled. He had only two astronauts in the pipeline. Is there even like a NASA program anymore? Like, do we know? Are there any American?
Well, there's some rumors.
Space Force, dude.
There's some rumors that we're going to be trying to bring NASA military back, though. But yeah,
they took over.
No, I don't think that the
search, and I'm not, but
I don't think that the search and exploration and discovery sense of NASA exists really anymore. I think that it's kind of been foreshadowed with a focus on, hey, let's try to get a grasp on Earth before we can try to explore the stars, which I mean, you can argue is a good idea, but you can argue is a bad idea.
Sad.
It's sad. Absolutely.
Well, no, it's so sad. It's so sad because I mean, one of the most inspirational moments in American history is when John F. Kennedy basically gave us a goal that was beyond our reach. And I saw a meme today I was just scrolling through Instagram, and the Orson and Wilbur Wright plane was only 60 years from when we stood on the moon. 60 years.
But the question is, Sean, did we actually go to the moon?
Of course we did. I'm not saying we went the first time, but we have been since. But I mean, to think about this, 60 years between when we invented the airplane as a society and got to space and got to the moon, I think that is pretty fucking astonishing. And it takes this Kennedy had such a vision of the future by not having that high goal. What are we hoping for? Like, what are we searching for anymore? And it's kind of sad.
I'm going to take a negative approach, Sean, and I'm going to go ahead and wallow in your misery with you.
Shocker.
No, I'm with you, man. Literally, I'm agreeing. Oh, okay. Jesus Christ.
Sorry. I'm so used to the other way. I'm sorry.
No, but I think that, you know, it's something I don't really think about much. But I think you hit it really, you know, the nail on the head. And I'll try to keep this brief. It's this idea that by taking away something to stretch towards, to reach towards, you know, we landed on the moon. Okay, well, what's next, right? That whole what's next. By saying, okay, well, we're going to take our focus, and instead of putting it up here to the stars, to something not unattainable but difficult to attain, and let's focus on the issues that we have at home or you know, on Earth, it almost asks us to wallow in that self-misery that is what we have around us. And you know, it's to me, it is a national thing. And I'm going to liken it to Miracle, a movie that we've talked about so many times, and I love Miracle. Mm-hmm. You know, you got this hockey team, which it didn't matter in 1982, whatever it was. It didn't matter if you liked hockey or not. You rallied behind something. You rallied behind the country. And I feel like space exploration in a weird way can do the exact same thing. I mean, we had that happening in the 1960s all the way up to the moon landing. And so if anything, taking away a program like NASA almost forces people, you know, citizens of the country to focus more on the problems instead of this idea that humans are capable of doing something. Right. And I think that's the problem, is that now we're saying, oh, humans aren't worth anything, when really we are. And I think that that's really something that I don't think about much, but you got me thinking, so thanks.
There's a great line from Superman, since we have talked about Superman in this episode. And I believe it's might have been spoken in The Man of Steel. I'm not sure. And the trailer, it was in the trailer, and it says, "They can be a great people, Kal-El, if they wish to be.
Yeah.
They only lack the light to show the way." And a lot of people and I think what Zack Snyder took of that is that Superman was supposed to dominate and rule mankind, which is not true. He was supposed to be an ideal for man to strive towards.
Yeah.
This movie kind of gives you, like, I don't know, it gives me a hope that one day we'll be able to have like a unified goal that we can all strive towards. But right now we're just struggling to find it. And I'm not trying to make it political in any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying, the space program represented that ideal, that thing that we could reach toward. And we've lost
this movie. This movie definitely gives me a happy memory, a hope. More for me, it's like it's a memory of like, okay, this is at one time, this is how it was, mm-hmm. right? And it's like this faint memory of like, oh, you know, it's not that far away if we really think about it. But it's interesting how it's turned to this right now, this conversation. But like it brought a happy memory to me seeing this movie. Just I want to say I'm a very I enjoy space movies, and this one I think I still throw up there with all the other ones. I wasn't expecting to enjoy it. I was looking forward to watching it. This was my first time watching it. So and this movie it brought back a wholesome of this old age of like we're trying to get back to, mm-hmm. and so somehow we lost our way.
Listen, it's 2024, yo. I'm still waiting for my fucking hoverboards. I'm still waiting for my flying cars, and I'm still waiting for my jetpack. So let's get this shit going. Let's get the shit on the road and shit like that. Time to get to fucking Mars. What the fuck? What's going on here?
Yeah.
It's funny how though at one point in 2022 or 2023, I feel like everyone was sending spaceships all of a sudden out to like, it felt like at one time you can buy
a ticket. Because Lance Bass was going up there.
And you can like buy your ticket to go. Yeah. Yeah.
And that brings us to the end of review. Now it's time of the podcast where each of the hosts provides a score on the following scale. Can Woody
control the ideas a little bit.
Provide some of the dreams, scale.
Control it, please.
Moving forward.
Ed, bring us through.
Mr. Roboto.
Yes. Zero, the perfect movie. You don't need shit to enjoy it. One, a feel good for Scott Tell. Two, a happy buzz. Three, an Uber lifting home. Four, rough morning watch of shame. Five, blacked out shit face screen very drunk.
I can't write anything down here. Let me see if I can do
it. Get your $1,000 pen, Sean.
Use like the deer blood of ink to put
the fucking deer blood of ink
on your answer.
That sounds like what are you doing?
I'm not giving a score yet.
The deer blood of ink. That sounds like somebody saying this sword was forged in the deer blood of ink.
Okay, ready?
One,
two, three.
You guys are.
Jeremiah?
Are you fucking kidding?
Wow.
Sean, how are you and I damn close? And Eddie and Jeremiah, Mr. Armageddon hater over there. We can see that, you know, everybody who's listening, Jeremiah has a heart. That's what we're realizing.
Yeah, so I'll start it up, okay, guys? Okay, so.
Yeah.
Sure? Okay. I think you should wrap it up.
I think you should wrap it up.
A little bit more positivity than we did.
I just got called out. Okay, so the reason why you watch this is that it's the chemistry of the cast alone that makes it worthwhile to watch this movie. It's cool to see Clint Eastwood do something out of his comfort zone. It's cool to see that, you know, that he's doing something different here. And it's also cool to see these legendary veteran actors that are going to live forever with this movie. Now, that being said, the plot is fucking cheesy, dude. I mean, you know, and at times it just drags in certain parts of the film. The plot is fucking far-fetched, yo. And the reason why I put my score for what it is because it's just four actors and they're fucking entertaining. And it's, you know, I'm just enjoyable. So what I did is I gave it a 2.85. I have a happy buzz, a shot, and a little
85
spill over. It's because of the actors.
So you're right underneath. You're in the Uber.
You know what you're
home.
Saying?
So
it's not quite an average movie. It's a little bit lower than an average movie, but it's enjoyable, right?
It's not the greatest movie, but I enjoy the fucking actors watching this movie, and it was fun. It was a fun movie, but yeah. Jesus.
I'll go Nets. Yeah, I'll be the Nets geriatric person to
go for
take
Woody.
Us home. So I was very excited to watch this movie, and like it didn't seem long. I remember Sean, we joked about it a couple of weeks ago, saying, oh my God, this is equally as long as one of these other movies, No Country for Old Men. But overall, it didn't feel that way. And it was, I think that put that probably made my score a little bit lower than I was originally thinking. To be honest, also, I had my score lower, but after us all talking about it, I raised it higher. I've never done that before. So I do enjoy Clint Eastwood, Tommy Lee Jones, and the whole Donald Sutherland and James. That's probably why my score is not a five. It's not a five movie. This movie is a movie that's a family movie, and I feel like it is a classic movie. I can go ahead and say it's a classic movie that I will be okay to throw it, you know, if it's on TV or if I have the DVD, VHS, I'll be happy to show my kids.
VHS.
You know, a good, fun space movie. I give it a 3.58, and it's 5.8 because that's the original score. I mean, the original year that the movie took place, 1958. So it's 3.58. It's right after.
These scores are weird.
You're doing an Uber lifting home with a big shot. So it's at the 3.58.
Yeah,
so
I'll take it next, and I'll just add on to what Eddie said. I probably will not put this on my Laserdisc or VHS or anything there. No, listen, the way I look at a movie is, and we've talked about this before, and Eddie, you kind of hit the nail on the head there, but is this a movie that I'm going to want to ever watch again? And to me, no, it's not. I'm happy and really grateful that I got a chance to watch it. And Sean, I really do want to thank you for throwing this out there, because it's not a movie I ever would have seen if we weren't doing this podcast. And I enjoyed the hell out of talking about it. And Eddie, Jeremiah, I really see what you're saying, is that it's fun to watch these actors that we've kind of all come to know and love in different roles, and just see them kind of, you know, put their hair down and just have fun and just enjoy themselves. I think that that's great. To me, this was not a movie that brought anything new. And Sean, you definitely actually improved my score when you said that there was something kind of cinematographically or some kind of improvement or something to the history of movies. I'm struggling here with the fact that this was, you know, older characters were given the limelight. And I think that there is some truth to that. And I think that that's a really great point to make. At the same time, this is, you know, it was fun, but it's not memorable. In fact, I had to go back through my notes because I watched this 2 days ago and be like, what actually happened? Because I know that I had a lot of frustration with the story. And what was the story? You know, and to me that shows it as being like,
definitely,
yeah, like it, there was just something missing. And I think it was the continuity. And I think it was probably about 20 minutes. I think if they had added 20 minutes of some exposition and some clarity at the end, I probably would have enjoyed it. And yes, I wanted that emotional, or it doesn't have to be emotional, but that farewell send off for Tommy Lee Jones's character. Anyway, I'm going to stop rambling. I'm just going to give my score. It's very, very similar to Eddie. It's just a little bit worse. Mine's a 3.62. So I'm also Ubering, lifting home, and on the way there,
3.62.
And I'm going to have a nice big gulp of a shot on the way home.
Come to think about it now, did anyone even thank Tommy Lee Jones?
No, I don't think so.
That he like died for this country,
the world. No.
Yeah, I mean the last scene where it was Clint Eastwood and his wife looking up at you know the moon and paying some respect for sure.
I was looking for more like a Bruce Willis moment.
Yeah, it wasn't that kind of movie though. Was it? It wasn't a. I mean, nobody even knew they were in peril. The world didn't even know it was in peril, and never will. So this is.
They almost lost their moon pretty close.
They almost lost Earth. Anyway. All right, I'll go. I'll wrap it up. I did find coming out of Jeremiah's pick, I found it very difficult to have a movie that fit the tone of where we're trying to bring you different variations of movies. We're not trying to give you serious movies every week. I'm not trying to bring technical movies every week. If I wanted to do that, I would have brought JFK and we would have had another 4-hour analytical podcast about, you know, the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I don't think that was appropriate to bring. So I was looking for a movie that I found entertaining. And not only was this movie entertaining, I felt it had heart, which is something hard to convey on screen because there are vastly worse movies that have been made than this movie. And there are obviously better movies, but I would say this movie it was right in the average to below average, but God dang it, isn't it fun to watch? And especially when you're talking about people who are kind of iconic in the history of cinema. I like watching Sean Connery movies. I like watching Clint Eastwood movies. I like watching, you know, these old actors who have been around forever, and you can see them evolve over time. And I think they, you know, quite frankly, I think they had fun making this movie. And like Brandon said earlier, there's nothing better than watching people have fun at what they love to do. And I think that that's what we saw in this movie. That being said, I see the problems with it. I mean, my score is a 3.25. It is definitely above average or below average movie. And it just, I was thinking about No Country for Old Men last week. I gave that a 3, which was probably a little harsh. But this movie is not even the same ballpark. So anyway, that's my score. When you take those and divide by 4, what does that give Space Cowboys an average rating of, Eddie?
Brandon, move over a little bit more. Yeah, I'm making sure. That gives us a 3.325. I know. I just want to make sure I have the same thing. I like to. I don't just say it until I see.
Oh, yeah. That's why I do it.
I've always done that. I like to see yours and mine. It's a 3.325.
You show me yours, I'll show you
mine. That gives us a pretty high score. Yeah, a 3.325.
You know what, Jeremiah? I'm just going to say this before you tell us where it sits. I think it probably is going to sit right where it should be. I think that's a good score of where it should be. Sean, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think there are definitely vastly worse movies than this movie.
Yes.
I can think of, off the top of my head, I can think of 20 movies that I would rather not watch, or I'd rather watch this over. So, yeah, we'll see where it sits.
Well, you're gonna enjoy my movie.
Oh, God. Well, Curse of the Dragon's Tomb.
If you guys want to know where this actually places in our category, this is number 70. It's right between Vertigo and a classic of our episode, Point Break.
Number 70. See, we have not brought Point Break in. And number 70 works. You know why? Because that's the age of everybody in this damn movie.
I think, I mean.
Point Break's better than that. Right?
There's a place. No,
Point Break Point is Break's worse than this.
So what are the three movies better than this, Jeremiah?
It's some of the classics that we've done in this podcast. Halloween.
Oh, God.
Armageddon. Are better than this movie.
Armageddon is better than this. I would disagree with that. I think Armageddon's not as good.
What's worse is Point Break, Wonder Woman, The Holiday, The Big Lebowski, Avatar, and the movie that we've been talking about a lot this episode, Superman.
You know,
well, I agree with The Holiday.
I remember when Sean made us watch Avatar, thinking that it was going to be a great movie, and that was a. That was 3 hours. I can't get back.
Avatar won like 90 Academy Awards. What do you want from me?
Overrated.
All right. Now that we are at the end of the podcast episode of Three and a Half Gentlemen, what movie will we be watching next week? I think Brandon has a selection based on my pick of Space Cowboys. Where are we going from here, Brandon?
And so, yes. Oh, so to give you guys, and when I say you guys, you listeners that we care about so much, I didn't have the issue that Sean had, which is to look at a movie with a great cast and say, damn, I don't know what movie to go with. Instead, I had the opposite problem. I had about 20 movies that I wanted to do. And Sean, you had a really great point earlier, which is trying to find a movie that fit into the vibe. There were some really heavy hitters that I wanted to talk about and wanted to do, and maybe we'll circle back to it later this season when we're maybe in kind of a mood for a more serious and dark and gloomy one. But I wanted to pick something that was not necessarily fun, but more lighthearted than some of the ones I could have gone with. And we're talking about 4 or 5 different actors and actresses that have put out a fucking list of movies that are more than exceptional. But I feel like Clint Eastwood is one of those iconic figures. So we are doing a Clint Eastwood movie. And I know that when I say Clint Eastwood movie, you three are probably going to the Westerns. We're not doing that. We're not going Western. We're not going super recent. So we're not going Gran Torino. We're not going, Trouble with the Curves. So that leads us to old man Eastwood still, but thinking that he's a young man Eastwood. So any guesses, any thoughts?
Like, are we going like Magnum? Like,
Are we going with Dirty Harry?
We are not going Dirty Harry because like I know Jeremiah. I'm probably making Jeremiah sad because we're not going Dirty Harry. No, we are going to go with 1993's in the line of fire, which is to me, I'm just telling you right now, I am not picking this because of Clint Eastwood, even though I'm picking this because of Clint Eastwood. This movie stands out to me because of one man,
Brandon,
and this is John fucking Malkovich.
John Malkovich.
How is this a family friendly movie?
No, he was saying it was. It's, I don't know where he got more lighthearted. Oh, it's, but,
lighthearted. How is this a lighthearted?
So one of my favorite movies, and also I guess it's not just lighthearted. I'm tired of giving zeros, so I don't want to give a bunch of zeros. One of my favorite movies is The Green Mile, and James Cromwell is in The Green Mile. So I really want to do The Green Mile. I also really want to do Babe, but I didn't want to throw that one at you guys. So I'm like, you know, but The Green Mile is fucking heavy, and it's another 3-hour long movie, and it's a fantastic movie.
I thought you were going to do Notebook. I thought you were going to go to James Garner and do Notebook. Listen,
compared to Death Row, Walking the Green Mile, and, you know, John Malkovich. I'm going to go with the John Malkovich, which I think, Eddie, you got the next pick, well, buddy. You start fucking thinking now because I'm putting that fucking beach ball on a tee. So there you go.
You got Malkovich. You Rene got Rene Russo. You've got, I think even, I think you got Dylan Mulvaney. No, Dylan McDermott.
Yeah. You have John Mahoney.
Who directed this movie?
Wolfgang Cole.
Peterson, who's also got some skill behind him. Wolfgang.
Dude, never any story.
Listeners, tune in next week for a fantastic analysis, breakdown, discussion of all of our favorite Secret Service agents in the line of fire.
It's literally, what's funny is this is my favorite Clint Eastwood movie. This might be my fourth or fifth favorite movie of all time. So I'm very excited for this movie.
Ooh, Tobin Bell is in it. So he's like the guy in all the Saw movies.
Shit. Oh, good point. Good choice on that one.
Well, there we go.
Shit.
Okay.
Either if you enjoyed our review or a fan of the podcast, we ask that you please subscribe wherever you're listening. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can also find us on Instagram at @thegentlemanpodcast. You can visit our website, thegentlemanpodcast.com. Or if you want to reach out to us, you can do so by email at hosts@thegentlemanpodcast.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week for In the Line of
Dun, 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 dun.
Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers. Among
the stars. Peace out, yeah.
All right. Please subscribe.
All right, Ed, what's your pick?
You got to give some time off.
Jeez, bro, everyone's eyes.